Hi, everyone, and welcome to the AGD podcast series. I'm your host, Dr. Wes Blakeslee. Are you concerned, as I am, about all the data breach stories you read about in the news every day? Do you believe you have a professional obligation to protect your patient's privacy? Are you having trouble determining what really matters when it comes to data safety and what is hype? If you answered yes in your mind to any of these questions, you're in the right place. Our speaker today, and we welcome him back to the podcast, Dr. Larry Emmett, is a certified HIPAA professional, a practicing dentist like us, and has written 3 books on using technology. He's also been recognized as one of the top 10 dentists in social media. Today, he will introduce us to data security, HIPAA, hackers, and hype. So please help me welcome Dr. Larry Emmett back to the podcast. Larry, good morning. Great to have you here.
Good morning, Wes, and thank you so much. I have such great respect for the AGD. I appreciate this opportunity tremendously. So thank you.
No, as do we. Larry, I'm going to jump right in here. We have a lot of material to go through. Recently, the ADA News reported a, and I'm going to say this very carefully, a $3.2 million HIPAA fine. That got my attention. But what does that have to do with us dentists?
Okay. Yeah, HIPAA, through, by the way, the HIPAA violations are investigated by OCR, the Office of Civil Rights. So the HIPAA is a civil right. Anyway, so yes, there's been a lot of these in the news. There was one last year for $3.9 million. There's been $2 million. The most recent one just a couple of weeks ago was $3.2 million, a fine leveled against the Children's Medical Center of Dallas. They lost 3,800 records that were on a laptop, and the laptop was stolen. And that is what happens, and that's where these fines are coming from. And I want us to think about that for a minute. Actually, if you do the math, because it was the laptop and a couple other things, there was $3.2 million. That comes out to about $500 per lost record, about $500 per lost record. So think about your dental practice. How many records do you have on your computer? And by the way, that's not just active patients. That's, you know, people that have been on there, their records are there. If they're lost, how many are that? And for most of us, it's easily 3,000 and sometimes 4 or 5 or 10,000. But if it's just 3,000, that's a $1.5 million fine. So that means that your practice is at risk. If your computer gets stolen or some of that data gets lost and you're investigated, you could be fined $1 million or more.
Wow. All right. Now, I guess the next logical question is, would any of our insurances, our professional insurances, cover us if we had a HIPAA fine like that?
The quick answer is no. And that's kind of scary because we tend to think of that, all these devastating things that we've got our liability coverage is going to take care of that for us. And in fact, that's what insurance is for. Because, you know, I got to admit, you know, the chances of this happening to us are very low. But if it does happen, it's devastating. I mean, think about what happened to you if you had $1 million-plus fine and that was not paid for by insurance. That means you have to pay for it yourself. For most dentists, that would mean you'd lose your practice. You'd probably go bankrupt. It'd be personal financial devastation, and insurance does not cover it. Now, having said that, there's been some changes in recent years. Until recently, our general liability malpractice insurance covered nothing in the cyber field. We're seeing some cyber coverage coming in now with some of the basic liabilities, but if you read the coverage, it's very limited. It's usually $100,000, which is not nothing, but when the fine is $1 million, it's just nothing. And so, and part of the issue, too, even when you get higher coverages, if you read the fine print, often they say they don't cover things like fines. That's, you know, that's a legal issue. You were fined because you did something wrong. They're not going to pay for that. So the fact is that we don't have insurance to cover these things. Now, let me back up. There are some companies coming in that are offering additional insurance, and you need to kind of read the fine print carefully because sometimes they cover the costs of you having to mitigate things. Sometimes they cover lawyer fees, sometimes they don't. They rarely cover these fines. So it's a huge risk that we need to be scared of.
All right. Let's drill down here a little more, Larry. Is it possible to protect our data in such a way that it will never be lost or stolen? Can we make it secure?
Yeah, I've been talking to dentists about technology and computers for 20 plus years, and I get this question. I've gotten this question in various forms for the 20 years, and rather than think about the things like cybersecurity and the cloud and bits and bytes and those things which are kind of obscure, I often like to just go back to what we know, which is if you had to secure a building, your office, or maybe your house, how would you do it? Well, of course, we'd start off, we'd put a, you know, we'd put a lock on the door, and then if we were a little more paranoid, we'd put an alarm system in, and then we might go to bars in the windows, and eventually we'd have, you know, armed guards and roving Dobermans. But somewhere along the line, you stop, because the next step of security is just not worth it. And if you ask your question, well, is it possible for me to make sure that no one can ever, ever, ever break into my dental office? The answer, obviously, is no. So if you can't do that, and get me back to the idea of the roving Dobermans, somewhere you go, wait a minute, it's not worth it, the next step. And so really what we're looking at is what's good enough. And then it's complicated by this other process when we do look at the digital side of it. Again, back in the olden days, you know, B.C., before computer, when all our records were on paper, could someone come in and steal those records? Well, I mean, I guess they could in theory. They'd back a pickup truck to your office and haul your files away and then spend months looking through them for data. Well, of course, that didn't happen. It's ridiculous. But now, any dentist can easily put their entire practice, everything about that practice, on a thumb drive and put it in their pocket and walk away with it and then lose it. But it's just as easy for thieves, cyber thieves, to break in and steal that data and then analyze it. So it's completely changed that process of protecting confidentiality, protecting our data. So back up. I want to say, what's good enough? We need to look at this from a certain point of view. As dental professionals, we have a moral, ethical you might say, we have a moral as well as a legal obligation to protect our patients' confidentiality. So when we're looking at what's good enough, it's kind of two things. What's good enough to fulfill that professional obligation? What do we owe our patients as dental professionals? And what's the legal obligation? What does the law make us do? So those are the things we need to kind of examine when we look at this process.
Larry, hackers are in the news every day. Everybody from Target to Yahoo to the political parties has been hacked. Do dentists need to worry about hackers?
Yeah, that's the scary thing. And we think of cybercrime, we kind of envision this, you know, shady cyber criminal, you know, probably a Russian or a Chinese hacker, you know, breaking into our data. And of course, like you said, we read about it. It's everywhere. You know, the Target and Home Depot and eBay and political parties have all been hacked. And so that's what we're kind of scared of. That's what frightens us. Yet when we look at what really happens, that's not where the danger is. There's a database maintained by the Department of Health and Human Services, commonly referred to as the Wall of Shame. And if you in fact do have a reportable database breach as a medical dental professional, one of your things you have to do is report yourself, and it will come up on that Wall of Shame. Now, that gives us a good database to analyze what the actual breaches are. And although we're afraid of hackers, the fact is when you look at that data, that half of the reported data breaches, half, are theft. Now, let me back up. That's not theft of the data. That's theft of a computer. I mentioned that $3.2 million fine that was in the ADA news. That was the theft of a laptop. So half of them are theft. Then 12% are loss. And again, not loss of data, loss of the computer. So that means, again, you have that thumb drive with your data in your pocket and somehow it gets misplaced, or you have a cell phone or a smartphone with it, or you have a laptop that gets lost or stolen out of the backseat of a car. So those two things together, theft and loss, that's 62%, almost two-thirds of reported data breaches are loss or theft of computers. That means, and by the way, that same data shows us that only 8% are hackers. 8% are hackers, which means that 92% are not hackers. So even though that's the one that frightens us, the fact is the data shows that the thing we really need to be worried about is loss and theft. Now, one of the issues with this, and particularly in my, you know, looking at this, is someone stole my computer. Well, did they steal it for the data? Yeah, probably not. They stole it for the hardware, or they took a joyride in a car that had a computer in the back. The fact is that when I've spoken with a number of dental offices which had this problem, where a thief broke in and stole a computer out of the office, and they had a reportable data breach, and not one of their patients actually had any was harmed in any way. So it's like a no harm, no foul. But the law doesn't work that way. The law doesn't work that way. If that computer gets stolen, if you're the victim of that theft, then you become liable for all these horrible things that can happen. Look, $3.2 million fine to a children's clinic in Dallas because the laptop was stolen. So even though the patient's unharmed, the rules are such that we are then in jeopardy to do that. Okay, let me take that another direction. So even though 2/3 are lost or stolen and only 8% are hackers, the other side of that is when there is a hack, that's where most of the files are lost. If you look at the numbers, and again, this is right off of that website, the biggest hacks by far are the biggest medical dental hack by far is Anthem, the health plan. They had 78 million charts lost. Next one is Blue Cross, 11 million. Another health plan called Excelsis, 10 million. So even though hacks are only 8% of the data loss reported, when you do lose to hacks, the numbers are incredible. So they're that's why kind of hacks do matter. But as for the everyday dentist, most of us, the hack is not the thing we have to worry about. Although there is a trend, and we've seen this in the last couple of years, there is a trend toward dental offices and medical offices and smaller companies being hacked because we do have good data. We rarely have good things in place to protect it. And even a basic dental office, your data of 2,500, 3,000 patients could be worth as much as $500,000 on the black market. So anyway, let me kind of restate what I just said. When we analyze the actual numbers, what normally typically happens is not a hack, it is a loss or theft. That does open you up to these fines and regulations from the Office of Civil Rights. And if there is a hack, and it usually is big companies, that's where the big numbers happen. But for us everyday dentists, that's not really what we need to worry about.
All right. Let's shift lanes here. Another thing we see in the news quite often is ransomware. Tell us about that and why we have to be concerned about it.
Oh, yes. That is one of the biggest trends we're seeing in data security in medicine and dentistry. So if you don't know what ransomware is, it is just heinous. I didn't say that word right. Heinous. It's horrible. It's horrible. So what ransomware is a cyber criminal gains access to your system, usually through some sort of malicious email, and they encrypt your data. In other words, they put it in a secret form that you do not have access to, and you cannot get it back, and then they hold it for ransom. And usually at a very limited time, they say, okay, doctor, you have 6 days to come up with a ransom, otherwise your data is gone forever. And we are vulnerable to that because that's huge for us. Imagine what would happen if you lost your entire patient database. How would that do your business? I mean, we are very vulnerable to that. We as dentists and medical professionals tend not to have good cybersecurity in place, so we tend to pay up. So in the last numbers I read, 88% of ransomware demands in the last year were for medical and dental offices. Hospitals, as a famous case was in the news, a hospital in Los Angeles paid for ransomware to get all their data back. So ransomware is a big deal. It's not a HIPAA thing, but it's certainly a data security thing. And the way you protect yourself from that is you need to have multiple versions of a backup. You need to have malware protection installed and functioning and up to date. And you need to do kind of internal cyber hygiene that your team members know, that you don't open unsolicited emails, that you don't click on sketchy web pages, that you pay attention to some of these things. So you need to have good training in place so that your staff knows what to do as well. So, yeah, ransomware is horrible. It is out there, and it's definitely something dentists need to be aware of.
All righty. Larry, you've talked about 9 basic steps that a dental office needs to follow to get started with HIPAA and data safety. Where do we start? Let's go over the steps.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me tell you some things to – how can I say this? I am not a lawyer, okay? If you took my advice as legal advice, you would be a fool. I am a dentist, and I've studied this extensively. I'm certified, and I've taken a number of courses. I've checked with all these other people, so I've actually read the rules, which is tedious and horrible. But I'm not a lawyer, so if you really get in trouble, of course, you need real legal advice. But let me kind of give you some things that you can consider. Because if you get an audit. If someone turns you in, or you lose a laptop, or something happens to you, there's kind of two levels to that. One is the process. You know, what are they going to ask you for? They're going to ask you, do you have a copy of your HIPAA policies and procedures? Do you have a HIPAA privacy officer? They're going to look for paperwork. In fact, if you read the regulations, about half of what they ask you to do is administrative paperwork. Now, I'm not sure how paperwork protects us, but that's what you have to do to have what, I'm not sure how paperwork protects our patients, but it protects us. So there's really two parts to this. One is what I call the PMP, protect my patients. What do I need to do as a conscientious professional to protect my patients? And the other SAF is CYA. And, of course, you know what that means. It's comply yet again. Okay. So what are the forms that we have to have in place? So there's, as I said, I've kind of developed these nine basic ones. And let's go through them fairly quickly because each one in itself can be quite complex, but we'll start off and kind of go quick. So number one is you need to have a HIPAA privacy officer. That's the very first thing that the rules say to do. It's pretty easy. Just do it. Now, again, the reason that's important is if you get audited, that's what they're going to ask for right off the bat. Who's your HIPAA compliance officer, privacy officer? It could be the dentist. It could be an office manager. Second thing you need to do is a risk assessment. And this is in the rules, and I think it's one of those things that fits both of those things. It helps you protect yourself, comply yet again, but it's also a good idea that where to get started. How can I really protect my patients? And the risk assessment consists of five or six things. Number one, where is PHI? Oh, PHI, by the way, is protected health information. That's what we're obligated by law to protect. And there's all kinds of pages that define it, but basically just consider it everything. If it's in the chart, it's protected. So where is it? Who has access to it? Is it secure? And so you kind of look at your office, and where is this data stored? In theory, it should all be stored in the server. That's the one main computer where all the data is stored. But in practice, it doesn't always work that way. So oftentimes, some staff member might be working at the front desk and sending out letters to patients that contain PHI, and he or she keeps those in a separate file at their workstation because that's just easy for them to do. Some dentists, for whatever reason, have set up a separate computer that has the data with their, say, their x-rays in it, or their cone beam data, or their CAD-CAM data is in a separate computer. It's not on the server. So that's, again, PHI we need to be aware of. Your backup system, of course, has all your data, so that has PHI in it. If the doctor has a laptop that they take home or even a smartphone connected to the practice, that has PHI in it. So we need to kind of look at where all that stuff is and, when possible, consolidate it, make sure that it's all, in fact, protected. So where is it? Who has access to it? The other thing that the risk assessment says is, does the staff know what to do, and is the paperwork in order? So in other words, have you had training? Because that's, again, you're going to be asked about that, is can you document that you had training and have the staff signed off on it and that kind of stuff. So first two things, privacy officer number one. Number two is perform a risk assessment and train the staff.
All right. Anything beyond that for these basic steps?
So what comes after the assessment? Training and documentation and kind of creating a culture of respect in the office that your team members kind of think of they think security first. They don't talk casually about patients. They don't casually open emails, that kind of stuff. And also we're charged with protecting that information. It's not just a matter of the risk assessment, but where is it? We need to protect it against burglary and theft and exploitation and hackers and employee error, system failures, fires and floods. So it's not just a matter of having the data, but one of our obligations under HIPAA is to protect it and keep it safe, make it available in the future. So how do we do that? Well, one of the security measures which we need to do with digital data, and this has been around forever, but it's even more significant with HIPAA and data safety, is backup, proper backup. And I won't go into a lot of detail what that means. It just means basically making a copy of your information. And in the past, until recently, that the way we did that was with a tape, kind of a super cassette on steroids. We'd put one in the office, do it at the end of the day. It'd copy itself overnight, and then a staff member, usually the office manager or somebody in the front desk, would take that home with them the next day. They'd throw it in the backseat of their car. And by the way, that's where some of these reported data breaches have happened, because the staff member is in the backseat of the car and someone breaks into the car and steals it, or they steal the car itself, and now suddenly you've got a data breach. Plus, this tape is sitting back there with the cars and the, you know, with the dogs and the kids in the backseat. Is that really secure? And the answer is no. So although that was acceptable until recently, to do a proper backup, need to have a good system in place, which you probably are going to need the help of an IT professional. I'm giving you a great overview here and trying to kind of give you a feel for what you need to do, but the fact is, at this level of our data and our security and our IT system, is you do really need to get a pro in there to help you do it. So that pro can help you set up what's called a BDR. That's a backup data, a backup disaster recovery system, which means you're copying your data to a second machine in the office, so you have it if it's lost or stolen or the office is crushed by an earthquake or a flood, and then an off-site backup recovery also someplace in the cloud. And you can actually send the information out of your office to a backup in the cloud automatically, instantaneously. There's no waiting for it to be copied. There's no throwing in the backseat where it might, in fact, get lost or stolen. There's no, and we get very reliable backups as opposed to those tapes, which, in fact, are not often reliable. So one of the things we need to do a backup, use the cloud, have a backup disaster recovery system in place.
Larry, let's talk about encryption. That's probably something we've all heard about and don't really know much about. Can you expand on that for us, please?
Yeah, so let me go back to what I was saying about how the biggest thing you need to worry about is someone stealing your data. It's not a hacker. But even if it is a hacker or theft, the thing that protects us the most is to encrypt our data. That's your get-out-of-jail-free card. If someone steals your computer and your data is encrypted, it's not even reportable anymore. So that's actually relatively simple. I shouldn't say simple. It's not simple. That's why we don't do it. It's not simple, but it is the best, most direct thing you can do. So encryption, of course, just means it's a system that makes your data secret, puts it into the super secret code that no one can crack unless they actually have the code. So there's a couple ways to encrypt your data. You can do it by software. You can do it by hardware with what's called an SED. That's a self-encrypting drive. But whatever you need to do, you need to have your IT professional set that up. Now, one of the challenges is that our software, Dentrix and Eaglesoft and all the rest, were not designed for encryption back in the 90s. We didn't think about this. So it's challenging. So once again, it's not something you want to do for yourself, but you wanted to have someone do it, an IT pro, set it up for you so that your data is encrypted in the office, it's encrypted in your backup. Anything that leaves your office, a doctor's laptop, a copy of the data on a hard drive, anything that leaves your office, the data is encrypted. That's the one best thing you can do to protect yourself against a HIPAA problem.
Alrighty. We're down to the last question. So let's talk about email, something we use every day in the office and at home. Is email HIPAA compliant? And if it's not, can it be made compliant?
The basic answer is email is not HIPAA compliant, and yet I know today there will be thousands, possibly tens of thousands of dentists across the U.S. are going to use email to send PHI, protected health information, usually x-rays, from one dentist to the other. It's technically a violation. Is it a big violation? No, but it's just not the right thing to do. So how do you make email or the transfer of PHI from one office to the other HIPAA compliant? A couple of ways. One is to, in fact, invest in encryption for that email. And typically, email encryption programs are per user. So in the office, you just need one user that's going to be the designated sender of PHI, and he or she will have an email program, and it's going to be $15 to $20 a month for that. The other way is to use, rather than send an email, to send the data through a encrypted website where it's actually sent up online, it's stored in an encrypted fashion, and then the receiving dentist goes back to that website with a password, and they can download it in an encrypted fashion too. And there's several services that will do both. Oh, and one last thing before we wrap up, because there is the last thing besides email that I think is so simple, and yet we kind of don't think about it. Remember, the biggest thing you need to worry about, Wes, is someone breaking in and stealing a computer. That's half of data loss. So just make that hard to do. One of the best things you can do to protect yourself from HIPAA violation is make your computer hard to steal. Put it in a locked cabinet. Put one of those, steel cables around it so you can't steal it. Just make it hard to steal, and you're going to protect yourself from the biggest data breach we need to worry about.
Well, You know, Larry, there is so much information here. My head is spinning right now. All my notes are covered. All my preparation sheets are just covered with notes. And I'm going to have to listen back to my own podcast, which is one of the reasons why I do them, because they're excellent sources of information. But on behalf of the Academy of General Dentistry, I want to thank you so much, Larry, for coming back on the podcast and presenting all this new information to us today. I know many members are listening in, and of that group, quite a few are going to want to reach out to you and get your expertise into their offices. What's the best way for our members to reach you?
Yeah, because there is more. We didn't even talk about passwords. There's so much we didn't talk about. So you're right. One thing, first of all, just real quick, I am doing a 3-day adventure CE program in Sedona, Arizona, coming up in the middle of May, May 18th to 20th. Lots of information on my website. That's a great CE program. You do get 12 AGD credits to go there, and you get to go mountain biking and having fun and adventure in Sedona, Arizona. So I call it Technology on the Rocks, coming up May 18th to 20th. So check online and see if that's available. If not, I also have lots of information online. Most of it's for free. And the best way to find me is through my blog, which is emmettontechnology.com, emmettontechnology.com. That's a blog. I add to it almost every day. There's links to the information. For example, there's a link to security, which will take you to all this data we've been talking about on the HIPAA. There's also one for paperless records and that kind of stuff. So, and if you want to contact me through the website, then you can do that. And I'm very open to contact. You can email me through the website. If you have specific questions, I am more than happy to answer those as well. So two things, Technology in the Rocks, May 18th to 20th, amazontechnology.com, and I'd be glad to answer your questions.
I appreciate that. And I think we just teed ourselves up for another podcast. So let's keep it moving forward.
I'd love to do that, Wes. I appreciate it. I love the AGD. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Ari. Very, very, very informative.